Welcome to the January 13, 2019 episode of the Arty News Podcast brought to you by Raymond Tech. For those of you listening for the first time, I scour the web every week and curate the articles, tweets, and back-channel sources to provide you, the non-nerd, a concise tech news summary where I answer the question, why does this matter to me? Like usual, I'll be starting off with the scary stuff, the data breaches, privacy concerns, and security threats, and ending the episode with the good stuff, because who doesn't like to feel all warm and fuzzy? Let's rip that Band-Aid off. First up in data breaches, a report from ThreatPost.com that Australia's early warning network was hacked last weekend. The attackers used, quote, illicitly gained credentials, end quote, to send out a spam notification via email, text, and landline phone call. According to the early warning network's administration, no one's details were revealed in the breach. It is noted in the article that administrators of early warning systems like these are more concerned with reliability and redundancy than security. This is the most important point in the article because these are often government-run or government-sponsored systems that have access to many points of contact. Next, we have a report from darkreading.com that social sharing site Reddit has had potential account breaches. The company has locked out some user accounts and required password changes on others. There isn't any info about what may have been done with the compromised accounts, but a blog post by Reddit employee Sporkaside indicated that easily guessed passwords were to blame. The blog went on to recommend using secure passwords and enabling two-factor authentication where available. A report from bleepingcomputer.com has revealed the kitchen utensils manufacturer OXO had a data breach that has spanned 2 years. According to the report, personally identifiable information and payment information was stolen. Bleeping Computer attributes this breach to a Mage Card attack. The most widely publicized Mage Card attacks were Ticketmaster and British Airways. Basically, MageCard is a program that sits on a company's web server and logs everything you type into their e-commerce forms, including credit card numbers. There are two main ways to protect against these types of attacks. Avoid using smaller sites and use a browser plugin like NoScript. NoScript will block any program or script from an untrusted source. It's available for Firefox, Chrome, and Opera on web browsers on PC, Mac, and Linux. It doesn't appear to be available for mobile devices. That's it for newly reported breaches and exposures this week, but I'd like to take a couple of minutes to follow up with some updates on previously reported breaches. The first is a report on findings from a Sing Health breach in 2017, which exposed data on about 1.5 million patients. Sing Health is a large healthcare provider in Singapore. The report raises issues with a wide variety of weaknesses ranging from misconfigurations and coding vulnerabilities to untrained staff and flawed incident response. The link in the show notes provides general tips on how healthcare organizations worldwide could improve their cybersecurity. Even if you're not in the healthcare field, it's still worth looking over. The second report is from health insurance company Humana. Bankers Life, an insurance company that works with Humana, reported a breach which allowed attackers to gain access to Humana's systems and expose customer information, including birth dates, addresses, the last 4 digits of their social security numbers, and insurance-related data. No payment or medical records appear to have been accessible. The attacker or attackers had access to the system for nearly 4 months. Bankers Life is offering a free year of identity repair and credit monitoring services. Additionally, they're going to provide training to their employees in cybersecurity methods. This further highlights the fact that cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility. I reported last week on the breach of Town of Salem, a popular online game by Blank Media Games. This week, a new report was released that 27%, or about 2.1 million, passwords from the 7.6 million accounts have already been cracked. This is indicative of simple and easily guessable passwords. Retailer Neiman Marcus has reached a settlement with 43 states over its 2013 data breach. Apparently, the company was moving customer credit card information in plain text, that is to say, with no encryption. The attackers were able to get that information by installing software in the store's credit card readers remotely and skimming the cards as they were swiped. Typically, when we talk about credit card skimming, it's in reference to a physical device installed on a credit card reader. This was a much more technical breach than that. These sort of situations are difficult to detect and prevent against, but have been mitigated by the adoption of EMV or chip cards. Finally, in data breaches, a hacker's bragging got him caught in the data breach of 1,000 German politicians. The lone 20-year-old confessed to revealing personal details, including private mobile phone numbers, children's pictures, and chat discussions. But that's not the end of the story, according to a professor of computer science at the University of Surrey. Professor Alan Woodward says, quote, "My concern is that the less informed will use such examples to downplay the threat from organized crime gangs and nation states," end quote. He elaborates further, stating that the stereotype of a hoodie-wearing youth in his parents' basement is the outlier, not the norm, when it comes to cybersecurity risks. While you may personally not be at risk of being attacked by government-sponsored hackers, the accounts you use at work or for banking may be. It's important for everyone to remain vigilant about their cybersecurity practices. With data breaches finally over, let's move on to privacy concerns. It's difficult to protect ourselves in an always-on, always-connected world, especially when the companies we pay and trust to provide us service are selling our data. I haven't seen much coverage of this in the mainstream media this week, but it's been all over the back channels and privacy nonprofit websites. A reporter at Motherboard, a Vice News site specializing in technology, paid a bounty hunter $300 to track and find a phone number. This bounty hunter made a phone call to a contact who then provided a screenshot of Google Maps with a blue circle. The blue circle, as you probably guessed, was the location, accurate to within a few hundred yards of where the phone was. Through a series of middlemen, companies like Securus and Microbuilt are selling phone location data to anyone who wants it, directly sourced from the telephone companies themselves. Motherboard's article confirmed at least three of the big four mobile phone providers are participating in this program, including T-Mobile, Sprint, and AT&T. Under the guise of providing a more effective and efficient system for debt collectors, Microbuilt has created a service that allows companies to track people who don't pay their debts. Unfortunately, some of the unscrupulous middlemen offer to use their Microbuilt skip tracing accounts to locate anyone you want for a price. But the bigger issue here isn't so much Microbuilt or this unscrupulous practice, but the fact that the major telcos have been caught and pledged to stop before. Since Motherboard's revelation this week, AT&T and T-Mobile have agreed to cut off all private industry access to location data. This still allows for law enforcement to submit requests for this data. AT&T and other companies have stated that they require consent from the phone's user before this location data is accessed, usually in the form of a text message. Sadly, this is far from reality. At this point, for those of us in the U.S., the only way to fight back against these kinds of tracking threats is to urge your congressional representatives to pass legislation mandating privacy. I have several links for more information about these practices in the show notes. Be sure to check it out if you value your privacy. An article from 9to5 Google this week revealed that Ring, an Amazon subsidiary that manufactures video doorbells, allowed an unnecessary amount of their employees' access to customers' video feeds. An internal tool for allowing tech support to access the stream of video coming from their video doorbell products was accessible by employees who never had a need to use the tool. Besides this invasion of privacy, Ring research and development employees had access to a folder that contained every video created by every Ring camera, with a database that linked each video to each customer. Even worse, these videos were stored unencrypted because, basically, it would take too long to have to decrypt them when the R&D team wanted to view one. I assume this access is for further improving the product and making new offerings, but it's still a little frightening. Allegedly, the videos and data are collected with the consent of users, but I think what really happened here is that their terms of service and privacy policy doesn't allow you to use the full features of their product unless you agree to having your data collected. Plain and simple, from a privacy and security standpoint, videos should never leave the devices you authorize without your express knowledge and consent on a file-by-file basis. Meaning, if you have an issue, that's when the data gets released and only when you acknowledge and agree to it. Finally, in privacy concerns, another reminder that the internet is forever. Google has won an interim victory in the European Union Court of Justice, or ECJ. Way back in 2014, the ECJ ruled that individuals have a right to require Google to remove sensitive information from search results. It's known as the right to be forgotten. Since this is the EU Court of Justice, Google assumed it could just block the search results in the 27 member nations of the EU and nowhere else. Google soon found themselves back in court. Long story short, Google's appeal that the EU and its member nations don't have jurisdiction outside their physical borders stands. Google can continue displaying unwanted or defamatory search results about individuals outside the EU. Let's move on to security threats. The partial US government shutdown has found another unintended victim, website security. When users visit usdoj.gov, they get a warning that the website is insecure. That little green padlock next to a website's name in your browser is your measure of privacy and security. Well, those little green padlocks require human intervention to make sure they stay locked. Unfortunately, the people who do that for many federal websites aren't because of the partisan bickering causing this shutdown. An established cyber criminal gang, TA-505, has moved from their established ransomware tactics into remote access trojans. This shift in technique indicates an increased level of sophistication by the organization. Ransomware exploits are often one-time cash grabs, whereas these remote access Trojans allow TA-505 to expand their nefarious tentacles into more than just a small handful of infected systems. Their infection technique is pretty simple. They send out tens of thousands of phishing emails with documents attached, usually related to a banking transfer. Once open, the documents execute code that grants TA-505 access to the infected system. This allows them to access data on your system and even remotely control it. The bottom line is simple. If you aren't expecting an email with an attachment, don't open the attachment. An article from ZDNet reveals that a Dutch researcher has identified a new possibility for Google search results to be manipulated. The boxes that pop up at the top of search results when you search for a specific person, place, or thing are called knowledge panels. For instance, if you type Steve Jobs into a Google search, a results box filled with information from Wikipedia shows up as the top result on mobile. Here's how that manipulation is done. By adding what are called arguments to the end of the search string in the location bar, you can make that panel show full screen. Now, if I want to manipulate someone into believing that George W. Bush is responsible for 9/11, I just add the argument to bring up his knowledge panel to the end of the search string, who's responsible for 9/11. The original article from ZDNet was published on January 9, and it would appear that Google has already updated their search engine to recognize when a knowledge panel has been attached to a search that isn't relevant. Good job, Google, but I'll be sticking with DuckDuckGo. Kevin Mitnick, world-renowned hacker-turned-security professional, revealed a new phishing scam that can potentially hijack accounts protected with two-factor authentication. These phishing emails look like legitimate correspondence from a company asking a user to click on a link. The link directs the user to the actual site through their own server. This allows the attacker to confiscate a file known as a session cookie. This session cookie allows the website to know it's you communicating with it. With the stolen session cookie in hand, the attacker can access whatever account you just logged into, without having to steal your password or access your phone to get the two-factor authentication. The best way to prevent these kind of attacks are avoiding clicking on links you aren't expecting to receive. Finally, the last phishing PSA and the last article in security threats is related to your tax return. Scammers will target corporations, large and small, this time of year with W-2-based phishing scams, because they're lucrative and simple. The most common method is sending an email complete with a spoofed internal email address demanding the W-2s for an employee or employees be sent via email immediately. Once sent, these W-2s provide a scammer everything they need to file a tax return and reap the refund rewards. As it stands right now, the IRS doesn't inform you if your tax return has been filed, so the best thing to do is to check that your return hasn't already been filed and file it early to cut down on the amount of time scammers have to access your money. Now we move from chaotic evil towards chaotic neutral. It's time for the other news. The healthcare industry is a huge and growing market that draws many big-name tech players. An article from Joe Best at ZDNet this week put together the puzzle pieces of Amazon's move into the healthcare market. Amazon has several irons in the healthcare fire. They have dedicated healthcare and life sciences units within their Amazon Web Services division. They also offer their Comprehend service, which uses artificial intelligence and machine learning to read medical records, x-rays, and MRIs to free up physicians' time. Recently, Amazon bought a company called PillPack, which will act like Amazon Prime for prescriptions. Amazon has also formed two new joint ventures revolving around healthcare. One with Arcadia Group, bringing consumer medical devices to market, like blood pressure monitors. The other joint venture was formed with Berkshire Hathaway and JPMorgan Chase to bring, quote, simplified, high-quality, and transparent healthcare at a reasonable cost, end quote. Industry analysts don't believe that Amazon is going to stop at just offering healthcare for employees of the three companies, though. While a monopoly like Amazon on healthcare is scary, all of this adds up to a vertical integration of many different parts of a healthcare chain that's rife with middlemen pulling down massive profits at the expense of the sick. In further news about Amazon making moves in previously untouched industries, an article from CNET this week revealed the tech giant is building its own game streaming service. Amazon's proposed service would forgo the need to buy expensive PCs or consoles by running the game in data centers and streaming it over the internet to connected devices. There are a lot of myths surrounding technology. Many of them have a kernel of truth. An article from CNET this week helped to expose and debunk some of these myths. Here are a few examples. You can't charge your phone by microwaving it. Just don't do it. It's dumb. I don't care what you've seen on YouTube. Macs can get viruses. They're less likely to because fewer people use them and there are fewer viruses out there, but they can get viruses. Airport x-ray machines cannot wipe the memory of a phone or laptop. That's not the way x-rays work. That's not the way memory works. That isn't how it works. And Actually, contrary to my own belief, using a bag of rice isn't the most effective method for drying out waterlogged devices. The show notes have a link to the Myth article and a helpful article about how to properly dry your phone. Google's board of directors, including co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin, are embroiled in two more lawsuits this week relating to sexual misconduct claims. Both lawsuits claim shareholders should be compensated for losses relating to share prices dropping after it was announced that Google executives received multi-million dollar exit packages. These packages were negotiated after the executives in question were found guilty by an internal review of sexual misconduct. The second lawsuit, filed Thursday, is based on information obtained from board meeting minutes in 2014 and 2016 and is heavily redacted at the demand of Google's legal counsel. The suit is also seeking significant changes to Google's corporate governance and stock structure, as well as demanding Rubin and other dismissed executives return their severance payments. German automotive firm Continental has established itself as a reputable tire manufacturer. But at this year's Consumer Electronics Show, the company is showing off its package delivery robots that look an awful lot like dogs. While this is just a PR stunt, the article linked in the show notes is worth a read just to see where robotics will be heading. In a bizarre turn of events, court documents disclose that Russian cybersecurity software manufacturer Kaspersky Labs was the whistleblower that assisted the NSA in naming and arresting a data thief. Harold Martin, the data thief in question, was arrested in August 2016 after he sent several terabytes of information to a hacker group called Shadow Brokers. For a little over a year, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has been waging a media campaign against the Moscow-based antivirus firm. The U.S. government banned Kaspersky Antivirus as a vendor from all federal systems as a result of this campaign. Finally, you can exhale that bated breath. It's time for the good news. On display at CES in Las Vegas this week is a new bed inspired by the gentle rocking of a cruise ship. The bed promotes slumber by unplugging you from our overconnected world. There's no app or phone connection, just a simple timer that gently decreases the rocking motion as you drift off to dreamland. Good news for gamers this week, two games are available for free for a limited time. The first is available on Steam for free until Monday, January 14th. A Story About My Uncle, the game's name, is a first-person adventure game about finding your lost uncle. The second is called What Remains of Edith Finch, an adventure game exploring a family's history. The Internet Movie Database, better known as IMDb, an Amazon subsidiary, has launched a free streaming service called FreeDive this week. It offers ad-supported TV shows and movies. Currently, the service is available via phones, tablets, computers, and Amazon Fire TV devices. No word on when or if there will be a Roku or Chromecast version. In partnership with Samsung, T-Mobile has announced a new feature called Caller Verified. Currently only available on Samsung Galaxy Note 9, the service is T-Mobile's way of fighting back against the increasing onslaught of spam calls. The feature puts a Call Verified icon on the phone screen when a call comes in. Since T-Mobile is the first to adopt this technology, only calls from other T-Mobile customers will have the Verified badge. Even though it's only a narrow margin of cell phone users, this feels like a step in the right direction to combat unwanted phone calls. In automotive news out of CES, Nissan has unveiled its new Leaf E+. The all-electric vehicle is finally pulling up neck and neck with the competition. Increases of 67 horsepower and 14 pound-feet of torque are exciting, but the most important number, the range, is now 226 miles. Pricing will be available when this new Leaf model goes on sale this spring. Hearing-impaired drivers can rejoice at new technology debuted by Hyundai this week. Two systems were debuted which allow vehicles to intelligently identify sound and communicate it to drivers. The first, called audio-visual conversion, changes sounds into visual warnings that appear on a heads-up display. The second, called audio-tactile conversion, makes the steering wheel vibrate in response to environmental sounds like emergency vehicles and horns. There's a video of a hearing-impaired taxi driver in the show notes demonstrating the new systems. In our final article in Good News, researchers at the University of Washington have created a smartphone app which may help to reduce deaths in the opioid epidemic. The app, called Second Chance, is still in the trial stages, but the team has reported great successes during testing at a safe injection site in Vancouver. Using the phone's microphone and speaker together to create a sonar listening device, the app can detect breathing and correctly identify the apnea that overtakes a person as they are spiraling towards overdose about 90% of the time. Upon identification of reduced breathing, the app alerted staff members at the safe injection site. Eventually, the research team plans to integrate the app with 911 emergency services. A fine example of technology throwing light into the darkness. There's that warm and fuzzy feeling, like a blanket and a puppy on a rainy afternoon. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, or TuneIn. The more buttons you press on those sites, the easier it is for other people to find us. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Raymond Tech IT for tech news updates that matter to you. Make sure you log on to RaymondTech.com and check the show notes, as there are a couple of bonus links to check out for further reading. I know I mention this every week, but now I've actually made it easier to get to. This week I rolled out my link shortener. Now you can go to raytech.co/listen for the latest episode and show notes. That's raytech.co/listen. Cooler than that, I've made following me on social media even easier. Simply visit raytech.co/facebook and /twitter, and that'll take you right to our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thanks for listening and have a great week.